thank you very much for joining me. My guests this week were the pianist Nicholas McCarthy and the actress Niamh Cusack. Now, I'm delighted to welcome Niamh Cusack to Classic FM to chat about her new stage production. Niamh, you're appearing in Ticking
yes.
at the Trafalgar Studios in London. It's a new play, isn't it? Can you tell me about it and your role in it?
Yes. The play is written by a writer-director called Paul Andrew Williams. It's his first play, but he's written a number of films and television scripts. He's very gifted. He's a real storyteller. And this is set in a jail in a foreign country where our son, after being in prison for 4 years, has been tried and found guilty of murdering a prostitute. We are typical middle-class couple coming from Kent, somewhere like Kent, a small village, fine, upstanding members of the community. But we clearly have had a difficult relationship with our only child. And he's been away travelling and got himself into this mess. And basically, the ticking is the clock is ticking because yes. we have a final hour with him before either he is about to be, he's going to be executed, or he may get a stay of execution or a reprieve of some sort. So it's putting a family under a microscope, and the dysfunctions of that family and the tensions within that family are really magnified. Sometimes, you know, obviously it's a nightmare scenario and an incredibly dramatic and intense. But there's also within it, because we are very human, very flawed, there's moments of what will be comical for the audience, you know, yes. in our inability to say the right thing and the complications of trying to communicate with each other are sometimes quite funny.
And when you first read the script, were those the qualities that leapt out at you? Did you immediately think, yes, I would really like to play this part?
I thought it was an incredible situation. You know, it was a great sort of jumping off point. I felt that the mother, I am a mother of one son. Please God, let him never get into anything like that sort of situation. But I think I really recognised the dynamic of three, you know, where it becomes two against one sometimes, and also that thing of well, just how much you love your child and I mean, it is unimaginable, and I don't think any, you know, nobody can know how you would react. And I think some of the choices that Paul has made are really interesting, very dramatic, and they have a ring of truth about them. They're not necessarily how I would react, but I hope they're not how I would react in at certain moments in the play, but they're really recognisable. I think anybody watching it, you know, we all come from families. We all have relationships with our parents, or as parents have relationships with our children. So there is, I mean, when you say there's something for everybody, there really is something for everybody in the play. And on top of that, there's this extraordinary scenario, which is really, really dramatic.
Niamh, there's a tremendous cast
yes.
as well as you. I mean,
yes.
it's what, Anthony Head,
yes.
Tom Hughes,
yes.
who, of course, is very much flavour of the moment.
Yes.
Terrific that you're working alongside people like that and the director,
yes.
Paul Andrew Williams.
Yeah. Now, this who told me to tell you he's a genius.
Yeah, well, please do. Please do. I was actually going to ask you, what is it like working with him?
I love working with him. I think he's, you know, everybody's unique, but he is a real one-off. It's been incredibly relaxed, but he is ruthless with himself and us in terms of he's really trying to find something that's truthful. And, you know, he said the other day, you know, I just don't want to ever watch this and think you're acting. And for me, that's a really exciting prospect that, I mean, it's not that I've always acted, but I think because of the nature of the play and the nature of the space and the nature of Paul's writing, it really doesn't, it's not about artifice, this play. You know, some plays are,
yes.
some plays are about presentation, and this absolutely isn't. This is about being. And for me, because I've seen Paul's films and some of his telly work, I'm very struck by he clearly has an eye for the truth. You know, I think he chooses the right people for the parts. I certainly look at Tony and Tom, and indeed David Michaels, who's playing the lawyer. I think, yes, you've really got it right. It can be very intense, and then we always have a break, or he always cracks a joke.
Yes.
So it's nurturing. You know, I don't think Paul would like to would imagine that I would call him a nurturer, but he absolutely is. He wants to draw the best. He believes in all of us. And I find the lads just so great to work with. And so there's, you know, it's you know, doing a play, any play, is about listening to the other person and reacting to the other person. And these three men that I'm working alongside make that incredibly easy. And they're very generous in the way they work with me.
The play opens later this week. Do you ever suffer from pre-performance nerves? You may not, but...
Oh, no, I absolutely do.
How do you combat that?
I knit. I knit in the wings. So, I mean, I knitting is something I came across... I'm just trying to remember whether it was... it was about 6 years ago. I think nerves do very often get worse as you get older.
Mm.
And although you have more experience. But... I started taking a ball of wool and knitting. A friend of mine knitted her son a patchwork quilt. And I thought, I'm going to do that for my son as he gets older, something you could take away with him. And I started doing it on a play, and I found it really therapeutic because it's sort of something to do with your hands.
Yes.
You know, you don't have to think too hard because really I only do plain and purl. I don't do anything else. And it's a nice feeling, actually, you know, in your hands, the wool and the needles. I use wooden needles. So
yes.
it's a nice feeling. And I find that calms me down. And of course, breathing, you know, if you keep breathing, that always helps. If you hold your breath, it's not so good. And if you hold your breath forever, then, of course, you conk out. But I find, you know, it's the beginning. Once I'm on for a while. The nerves
it
go.
Goes,
you stop thinking about it. I mean,
yeah.
The odd time you get a sudden whoosh of nerves, but you have to have faith. You know, it's an act of faith, and I think the audience come knowing that. You know, I think that's where one of the places where theatre is so different to television or film or radio. You know, people know that it's happening right in front of
yes.
them. They know that any accident that happens, you know, we're going to have to deal with. You know, if you forget your lines, we're going to have to deal with it. And that is an excitement. You know, I think the audience come in a way to see an adventure in a very safe place. You know, it is an adventure. They don't know what's going to happen. Mm. They don't know what's going to happen in the story, and they don't know what's going to happen to the actors. Anything could happen. Sometimes anything does. And that's the trip we're on.
Niamh, you come from an extraordinarily talented theatrical family, the Cusacks. I just wonder, how difficult would it have been when you were growing up to turn round and say to your family, you know, I really want to be a nuclear physicist?
They would have been over the moon. Oh, my God. You know.
So you didn't feel a particular pressure to follow in the footsteps?
No, the pressure was to do something else. No one wanted anyone to be an actor. I mean, my parents didn't want any of their children to be actors. My mother particularly, I think she felt it was... not a great way in terms of giving you stability, not a great way to live. She'd seen the pros and the cons, but all the girls have become actresses. But I think there's a, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I think my family are all very, you know, they're very interested in what we do and very supportive of what we do. But if I had, you know, I was a musician first, and they were so proud of the notion that I was going to play in an orchestra. I think they thought that was much more glamorous and exciting than what they did.
Tell me a bit more about that, because you did actually win a scholarship, didn't you, to the Royal Academy of Music, and
yeah.
you were a flautist.
Yes.
Tell
yes.
me a bit more. I mean, your career could have gone in a very different direction.
It could. I mean, my mother, by the time I was growing up, my mother was on her own, and there was myself and my little brother at home. And she, I think she felt to some extent that she wanted us to have a different sort of life. So she sent us to music lessons, and we showed some sort of talent for, I think, in retrospect, I think we were both good performers as opposed to really great musicians. And we both were members of the Irish Youth Orchestra. And that's where I really took off, because I just loved, and this is the same as acting, I love the collaboration. I love being part of something. And when you're in the middle, you know, as a flute player, you're sort of in the middle of the orchestra. You hear all those sounds, and it's the most incredible feeling. It's a really visceral feeling. It's like your whole body is throbbing with music. So I loved that, and I enjoyed the social life. And that's what made me practice the flute really hard. And then I got the scholarship to the academy. So I sort of followed the path that seemed to be opening out in front of me. And then I got to the academy. And I think it was then that I realised I wasn't a musician. I was around people who really, really were musicians. The boyfriend, my first boyfriend, was a cellist. And he used to, in order to remember, you know, codes for his bank or anything, he'd sing the intervals. You know, so he thought, he dreamt in music in a way that I absolutely didn't. I think even then, language was something I responded to much more than notes. And I didn't really understand music the way some of the musicians I was around at that time. So anyway, I did my 3 years. I got a job at the RTE Symphony Orchestra in Dublin and did that for a year. And I did enjoy it. And then I came back to London and I couldn't get any work. And that was when I thought, right, I'm going to do something else. I went to the City Lit in Covent Garden, was going to do a French course there, but it was booked out. And as it happened, the acting course, which was a day-long Saturday class, was free. And I enrolled in that, and it happened to be a brilliant course. A lot of the people there were already thinking of themselves as actors and were applying for drama school. And I just followed the herd. And when I told my father, he said, no one's going to hear you pass the first three rows. You're so quiet. And my sisters were appalled. My poor mum had died by then. But my sister thought, you know, mum will turn in her grave if she knew what you were doing now. So they were appalled at the notion of me becoming an actor.
And yet you've been incredibly successful. So it was obviously the right thing for you to do.
I think it was the right thing for me to do. I mean, I think success is relative and it depends on luck, actually. But I think I love going in and starting, you know, having the privilege of entering a whole other world, of being someone completely other to myself. You know, just the adventure and being challenged in that way.
One final quick question. Does classical music still play an important part in your life?
Yes, it absolutely does. I think for me, classical music is like a shortcut to emotion and to solace and comfort and it's because I don't understand it. I think I don't listen to classical music critically. I allow it and have always allowed it to just envelop me and take me somewhere else. And it still does that. And I feel so lucky that it was introduced to me, that it's part of my world map. And long may it continue.
Niamh, this has been fascinating. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you, Charlotte.
Charlotte Green's Culture Club on Classic FM.
This is Charlotte Green's Culture Club, and my guest on Classic FM this afternoon is Nicholas McCarthy. Nicholas, thank you very much indeed for coming in and talking to me.
Thank you.
Now, John Suchet had your new debut album, Solo, as his album of the week a few weeks ago. And indeed, last week on my programme, I played I Giorni by Einaudi, played by you, which I thought was terrific.
Thank you very much.
You were born without a right hand and you wanted to be a concert pianist. Now, how difficult was it for you to be constantly rebuffed in the early stages and told that you simply wouldn't make it?
Well, it's not the first thing that your son with one hand comes out. I remember, you know, coming to my mum and dad and saying, Mum and Dad, I want to be a concert pianist. And, you know, their face was a bit like, OK, darling, you know, that's fine. We'll support you. But I don't think they ever thought I would obviously take it to the stage where I have taken it. It was difficult, you know, I think. Anyone in any career, especially in a creative industry, it's difficult. And I think you're always going to have some people who are negative about what you want to do or are telling you can't do something. And that obviously happened to me. And I just really had that belief from the word go in myself. And I think my parents really instilled that in me ever since a child. You know, a lot of parents with children of my disability potentially could feel the need to wrap them in cotton wool.
Of course, yes.
Whereas my parents didn't. And I think that really did instill in me that determination and that belief that anything is possible, really.
And did you really have that from being a very small child? I mean, were you determined as a small boy to do things that people would tell you that you couldn't do?
Oh, absolutely. I remember, I mean, I was brought up in a very child-orientated little cul-de-sac. You know, it was very much, you know, we were all the same age, all used to play together. And I was kind of determined to be the first one to ride my bike without stabilisers. I just remember that was my little challenge to myself, which I did. You know, all my two-handed friends, and there's me with my... And I remember my mum, I don't actually remember this, but my mum said all the neighbours just stood out and they were just in tears when I was like, did it for the first time without stabilisers. So things like that, I think I was... I used to set myself little challenges in my own head, you know, just say, like, I want to be the first, I want to do this, I want to prove that person wrong who said I couldn't do something. And so, yes, it certainly has been from very young.
Where did that desire to be a concert pianist come from? Because you were relatively old, in inverted commas, 14.
14, yes, when I decided.
What was it that inspired you? What was the moment where you thought, I would really want to do that?
Well, I used to want to be a chef. Which, again, is a very dexterous job. Yes, I'm not really quite sure why I was drawn to these very hand-orientated jobs. But I saw a friend of mine playing a Beethoven piano sonata, the Waldstein sonata, which is one of my favourite sonatas. And I just had one of those moments that you often hear people talk about on TV and radio, you know, that is what I want to do. That is what I wanted to become. I wanted to become there and then a concert pianist. Quite naively at 14, not really knowing anything about left-hand repertoire, not really knowing anything about how to go about, you know, honing your craft as in music college and everything. I come from a very unmusical background. None of my parents or family went to music college. So it was really, we were kind of fighting in the dark a bit, kind of thinking, right, what's the next stage? Do I go to junior college and to go to conservatoire and things like that? So it was an interesting time when I made that decision. But yeah, one that obviously paid off.
And, I mean, it's been incredibly successful. You graduated from the Royal College of Music. You've now got a really flourishing international career. Let's go back to the album, which is called Solo. What is it about the left-handed repertoire? It's not that substantial, is it? But there are quite famous composers who have written for the left hand. Did that dictate your choices for the album?
Well, funny enough, you should say it's not that substantial because I, like you, felt that when I first started researching, but actually it's hugely, I mean, there's a real lifetime's worth of work available. And I think the figure is something about 31 or 32 piano concertos for the left hand, let alone obviously the lifetime's worth of work of solo repertoire, which my disc is all solo repertoire. So surprisingly enough, there is actually very much so an awful lot of rep there. For me, choosing pieces for the disc, I wanted to give people a real snapshot of what was available because it's not hugely known repertoire. And I wanted to share with my fans as well as new listeners, you know, really what was available and how much, you know, you can have dark and moody Scriabin and then beautiful Nigel Hess, you know, a new commission. And then there's my own arrangements of Gershwin. So a really nice mix and of varied repertoire. And that's really what I wanted to put this first.
Well, you mentioned the Nigel Hess, which we're going to hear now. This is Nocturne by Nigel Hess. Nocturne by Nigel Hess, played by my guest this afternoon, Nicholas McCarthy. How did that come about?
Well, Warners were really great with me. And you hear some horror stories with major labels where they say, oh, they it's very controlling. Whereas with me, they were lovely, you know, and they really did let me kind of pick and choose what I wanted to do for this first album. And they then said, have you thought about commissioning something? Which, of course, I had thought long and hard about that and was something I was very keen to do. And they said, you know, have you got any composers in mind? And my instant reaction was, well, yes, Nigel Hess. I love his music. And I feel it would really suit my type of playing. And so my manager emailed him and within the next day, Nigel got back to us and said, you know, I'd be delighted to be involved. And that was it, really. So I was very involved with the whole compositional process. We met up lots of times and yes. He would send me, you know, drafts, and then we'd reach out. You know, it's great to really be involved from the word go. So it was a really exciting process for me.
And one thing that struck me when I listened to you play is that I can't believe that you're not actually playing with two hands. And it's extraordinary, but it does sound, it's a very full, rich sound. And it's quite hard to believe until you actually watch you to realise that you're not actually playing with two hands.
It's all about creating an illusion. As a left-hand pianist, I have to create the illusion to my audience that even though there is only one hand play, I need to create the sound for their ears yes. of two or even three hands playing sometimes. But I had quite a funny story that happened recently, actually. I was playing a concert, and in the interval, a blind man and his friend came backstage to see me. And he said, I've just heard this first half of the concert. And it was only the fact that my friend said, isn't it wonderful that Nicholas does that? And all with just one hand. And he said, I just didn't believe it. He said, I have to come back. And then he felt my yes. my right arm where I don't have a hand, because he kind of had to prove to himself, you know, that his friend was telling the truth. And I said to him, that for me is a lovely moment. You know, I felt very humbled and very pleased that had happened, because it yes. meant I'm doing my job right.
Of course.
I'm creating that illusion. So, yes, it was a nice moment.
Do you have to make more use of the pedal when you're only playing with one hand?
Absolutely. The pedal, you know, often I'll go to recitals and I'll hear a pianist play Bach with very little or yes. no pedal, and that's wonderful. With left-hand repertoire, you just can't do it that way. And that applies to all, you know, types of repertoire across left hand. It would just sound, you wouldn't create that illusion then, you know, and that pedal really is a very close ally for someone playing, you know, left hand alone repertoire.
Well, let's talk about future plans, because your career is really taking off and flourishing. Now, you're giving a concert at the Elgar Room in the Royal Albert Hall on the 11th of October, I think.
That's right. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's actually my album launch concert, if you like, which is, you know, I'd love people to come along to. So I'm playing the entire album live.
Lovely.
And I also, throughout my concerts, and people who haven't been to my concerts before, I chat quite a lot in between the pieces. So I give little anecdotes about my travels and little stories as to why these compositions were composed. Because often there's really funny, witty little...
I'm sure, yes, yeah. a background story to it.
Exactly,
yes,
and I like to share that with audiences. You know, I want them to kind of think like, oh, how interesting that was composed because this man wanted to smoke a cigar with his right hand whilst playing the piano. You know, that's an Italian composer I play, you know, and there's these little stories which people like to hear.
Yes,
and it kind of puts the pieces in a bit more context sometimes. So yes, I'm really looking forward to the Elgar Room on the 11th. It'll be great.
And you're also a motivational speaker, aren't you? You've given a TED talk at the Royal Albert Hall.
I have. That was quite daunting.
I'm sure it was. I imagine. I mean, it's such a huge venue and so many people there. But I've actually seen that on the website, and it's very impressive, and you look very relaxed.
Oh, thank you. It was all acting. I was very nervous, very, very nervous. But I just acted through it as if I wasn't nervous. But no, I mean, ever since that, actually, I do a lot of motivational speaking for businesses and schools. I do a lot of education things, inspirational talks and things. And it's a part of my job, which I love. You know, yes. I really like engaging with audiences. And sometimes you can't always do that from the concert platform, whereas with the speaking side of my career, that's something which I love doing.
And really, your mantra is that anything is possible.
Definitely.
With a lot of hard work, obviously, and determination. And you're living proof of that.
Definitely. I think, you know, it's difficult. People are very quick to say they can't do something. And that's what I just want to instill in people, that, you know, if I, the boy with the one arm from a small village just outside of Epsom, you know, managed to make it as my dream job, then I really do think anything is possible.
Nicholas, I have really enjoyed this. It's been lovely to meet you.
Thank you.
And we're going to play out now with Summertime by George Gershwin, played by my guest, Nicholas McCarthy. Thank you for downloading this podcast. I'll be back with you at the same time next Sunday, when my guests will include Sir Tom Jones.